Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Welcome to the podcast, West Coast Baseball Bias Podcast. To be specific, that groan you hear was Adam Nelson. I am Samuel Paul, and we've had a really good week of baseball.
Don't look now.
We're right in the middle of the postseason. We've had some good baseball. We have had some blowouts. We've had some pitching duels. We have had some exciting games. We've had some unexpected turn of events. I think that one of those unexpected turn of events was the reason why you were groaning just then.
Told me not to look now. You could have told me that a few days ago. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the warning. Not too keen on doing this episode. I tried to take all the pills in my medicine cabinet last night so as not to have to wake up this morning. But unfortunately, I did. And I will try to keep my spirits up. I don't know how it's going to be. For the benefit of the listener.
Yeah, we know you have some loyal listeners out there, and that's why he's agreed to come on and actually talk about what just happened in L.A.
I mean, by now it's old news. It's already Saturday.
It is.
We're already one game in the books in the championship series. Another game's about to start, and we're going to get another one tonight. Yeah. Are we getting into that right now?
I don't know. We don't have to get into it right now. We might have to say something about it.
What game are you talking about?
What game am I talking about? I'm talking about all of them in general. I mean, we had a huge blowout in one of the game fives.
Jesus. I had to be out of the house at 2:30. Turned on. The game started at 2. I'm assuming you're talking about the Braves and the Cardinals.
Yes, the Braves and the Cardinals.
Game started at 2. I figured, hey, I'll watch a couple innings, and then I got to leave. I watched an out in a half hour. A half hour, 10 runs later, there was one out. I left. I mean, I had to leave, but that was the game. I mean, I saw the whole game within 30 minutes. That was pretty insane. I mean, it all started off with a walk. And
a sacrifice bunt, and then
the wheels fell off.
Yeah,
that was pretty insane to watch. I was shocked actually because I mean everybody was, especially they were in Atlanta. I probably should have closed those windows. It's kind of a hot day. It is October in San Francisco.
It is also Fleet Week this week, so the U.S. Navy is in town putting on an air show.
Oh, man. All right. We have 1 hour to kill this episode. And in fact, I don't have anything. You're going to be doing all the heavy lifting on this show because I have nothing. I've been in a bit of a depression. I haven't really been baseball minded lately. You probably will be hearing some Jets in the background. We apologize for that.
I get it. I really do. I fully empathize. I have a hard time sympathizing because, well, I'm not a Dodger fan and a little bit gleeful that the game turned out the way that it did.
As most insecure Giants fans are, but I beg to differ, my friend. But it's okay. I work here. This is my job. We get paid 6-7 figures to do this show, but I also moonlight in a very public atmosphere, let's put it that way. And I'm surrounded by people and talking to people all night. That's my moonlighting, and I had to go in the day after game five of the NLDS. And, of course, I work in San Francisco.
In a building filled with Giants fans.
Correct.
With a couple notable exceptions.
Now, and I, yeah, I will, well, no, there's, they're all, yeah, I mean, they're pretty much all Giants fans. But, and that's fine. I'm used to it. I've lived here for, you know, almost 15 years. I get it. It was, I mean, aside from the, of course, the, let's say, less discerning, maybe, speech impaired fans that are just pointing and laughing. Besides them, I will say the baseball fans were more sympathetic than you know, than sort of dancing on a gravestone. You know, they, because what transpired was very strange, to put it that way, and hard to watch. And even if you're not a Dodgers fan, it was hard to watch. It was hard to watch Joe Kelly come out in the 10th again. I mean, what the hell is going on? I mean, Kershaw's home runs aside, Joe Kelly coming out in the 10th? I mean,
after pitching the 9th.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely questionable. I don't know why you don't bring in a fresh arm after that. Joe Kelly doesn't normally pitch more than one inning.
No, of course not. I mean, he can, sure. But why? He, game 3, couldn't even find the strike zone. I mean, he came in. The only appearance he made in that series, he came in, walked two guys, didn't get out, didn't get any outs, and then left. And yeah, he found the strike zone in the 9th, and that was great. You know, a guy that could throw 98, 99, and then also have like a little biting slider and curveball, great. Okay, he did his job, get him out of there. Not unlike Kershaw doing his job, getting Buehler out of the jam. He did it, great, all right, he did his job, next.
Yeah, he doesn't need to.
Why
come,
are you bringing him
out? He doesn't need to come back out for the 8th.
I mean, I get it. You know, Roberts didn't want Maeda against Soto. Okay, fine. But bring in Maeda then just for Rendon. I mean, Maeda's numbers have been the best in the bullpen, and he's fresh, and he's used to doing that. Kershaw isn't used to doing that. Huh. I know he wanted the ball. I know Roberts wanted that poetic sort of romantic idea of Buehler-Kershaw, which is another thing that really I don't understand. Why did they make that public? Why are they talking about this, you know, days before that game? Yeah, we got Buehler Kershaw. Like, why don't we just keep our cards a little closer to our chest? You know, I know we thought we had it in the bag. I say we. I'm going to be saying we a lot. I mean, the Dodgers. But, you know, why share the strategy? Unless you're doing it to, you know, unless it's like a decoy and you're not going to bring Kershaw in and you're just saying that. Because All the Nationals players are just waiting for Buehler to come out, and they know Kershaw's coming in, and they all have that stigma
the Nationals game 1 or game 5 just could not figure Buehler out.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were, I felt, listening to that entire game, felt like they were lucky to have the one run against Buehler.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as they announced that, it looked like Buehler was near the end of his outing, 115 pitches.
Yeah, he threw more pitches than he had ever thrown in any single game.
Which is fine. And then they said that Kershaw was warming up in the bullpen. It's like, to bring him in, they're going to give the Nationals a chance. He came in, he got the strikeout to get out of the 7th inning.
Right. 1-2 Great. 3. Boom. Got him.
And he comes back out with a fresh inning.
Yeah.
I guess I understand, but
no, I don't.
Why don't you go with your regular bullpen guys who have been doing well all year, all postseason, and go with a guy who people in the postseason have confidence against that they don't necessarily have against in the regular season.
Exactly. I mean, really, you could say they were going to be feasting, or they were going to be happy with anybody coming in after Buehler. They're just trying to get Buehler out of there. And then when they see Kershaw, even they're just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is almost better. You know, the Roberts gambled on Kershaw instead of Kolarik to pitch to Eaton. And it paid off. Great. 1-2-3. Got Eaton out. Struck him out. Now you got Kolarik for Soto, who he hadn't had a hit off of yet.
Right.
You know, Kolarik's been great against lefties. That's perfect. Dave, you know, the situation worked. Now you can take Kershaw out, bring in Maeda, bring in Kolarik, then bring in Kinley for the 9th. right? I mean, it seems simple, even if the game is tied.
And okay. that's been the pattern most of the year. 106 wins.
Yeah.
Should go a long way to establishing a confidence and a pattern. I understand that people want to treat the postseason differently, and in a certain respect, you do have to treat the postseason differently.
Sometimes,
in that every out is important. Every at bat is important. It's magnified. It's amplified because the postseason. So you have to be even more careful, which would be don't do too many things that would be unusual.
Right. You don't win 106 games and then go to the postseason and completely change what you do. You know, you dance with the dame who brought you. We have the fifth best bullpen in baseball. You know, use them. And by the way, you know, let's just save Kershaw for game one even of the NLCS, which he would have been fully rested for. I get it, you know. Scherzer came in, had that 1-2-3 inning, you know, in the game, what was it, game three? Game two? It was great. It was poetic. It was awesome. Yeah, Kershaw's not Scherzer, you know. He's not a guy that you can just get all hopped up, pumped up, come in all angry. He can't pitch angry. Kershaw can't pitch angry. He can't. Scherzer can. Kershaw cannot. And when you're coming in a game, in essentially relief, you kind of have to have that anger to you, you know? The first inning is always Kershaw's worst inning. And then once he gets out of that, he always settles down. And that's basically like saying, yeah, here's your first inning. Come on out and see what happens, you know. Okay, gives up the home run to Rendon. Yank him. No other pitcher stays in that late of a game when he gives up a home run. I don't care who you are. You're out. Bring in the next guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, look, in a way, it's almost this cruel irony, this sweet, disturbingly painful irony that, you know, 2017, really for Robert's entire career as a manager, he's been sort of chastised for being too analytical, right? Pulling Rich Hill out of a perfect game his first season as a manager. Perfect. That's never happened before. Nobody's ever done that before. Pulling Stripling out of a no-hitter, right, in the eighth inning. It's never happened. Nowadays, it's kind of common to see no-hitters by committee. But, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, that was crazy. I mean, you remember, right? It was like 2015 was the Stripling one, and then Rich Hill the next year, same thing. Perfect game. I mean, that's crazy. But now everybody sort of accepts it. So Dave Roberts has always had this stigma attached to him that he's too analytical, right? I mean, obviously we think of 2017 World Series, Rich Hill, four innings, one hit ball. He's lighting up the competition. Roberts pulls him. Why are you pulling him? Okay, Roberts pulls him. Then what happens? Morrow gives up that 3-run home run. Oh, okay. The World Series has turned around. 2018, right? Same thing. Rich Hill's dealing. 4 innings, like 2 hits maybe, right? Pulls him out. What happens? Madsen, 3-run home run. I mean, on paper, sure. It looks like Rich Hill should have come out. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't pass the eyeball test and you still got to manage. So anyway, cut to this year, right? Okay, Rich, I mean, I guess maybe Roberts is thinking, all right, I'm going to go with my gut. I'm going to go with my boy Kershaw because, yeah, sure, he's the greatest pitcher of his generation. Of course, why not? Even though the numbers, I'm sure, told him not to, right? And so the one time that he veers, he gets stung. He gets snake bit, right? I mean, it's cruel and ironic, and it's awful because it's the postseason and it's a do-or-die game. It just seems like, wow, man, I mean, we've seen this before, but sort of in reverse, you know. Roberts' main fault was that he's been too analytical, and then the one time we need him to be analytical. It's been a few days.
Is Roberts be looking for a job this offseason?
No, he has a job. Trust me, man. Look, I'm...
You're not in the Fire Roberts camp because there's a lot of Thursday LA
night,
papers.
Thursday night, yeah, or Wednesday night. I was listen, and we've talked about this before on here, and you've probably never heard me complain about a manager. Even when we had Mattingly and Torrey, I've generally always seemed to been a manager apologist. You know, I always kind of feel bad for the managers, like especially during the Mattingly years. I mean, I don't know, maybe there was some tension and there was some personality differences, but to me, it always seemed like Mattingly got us there, and then we just didn't play well, kind of thing. You know, we couldn't seal the deal, and to me, it never really seemed like it was poor managing. You know, the manager always takes the blame when they lose and never gets the credit when they win kind of thing. And I would see managers around the league just get fired for, you know, having a good season but not an amazing season. And it always seemed weird to me. But that game, yeah, that was the manager. Kershaw's not going to say, hey, take the ball away from me, you know? I mean, neither is Kelly. He's not going to say, all right, coach, I'm out. You know, no, that's the coach's job. You got to get in there. It's the first time I've ever thought, oh, man, yeah, no, the manager really screwed up there, and I can't really forgive him for that. Look, he's never not won. You know, he's averaged 98 victories as manager, averaged in his four seasons. You can't get rid of him. You know, he's never not won the division. Most of the time, it's just we didn't show up, or we had a guy named Darvish on the team. So now, after a few days, sure, yeah, I don't want to see him gone, because who else are we going to get? Joe Maddon, you know, I don't know, Buck Showalter, Dusty Baker, maybe, you know, his name's floating around. There's 9 manager positions out there right now.
I know.
No, he's safe. Plus, he already signed the 3-year extension. He's not going anywhere. That was a big boner, though, to say the least. And again, you know, all of our vision is perfect in hindsight, but man, everybody, even these people I was talking to the next night, Giants fans were saying, like, we couldn't believe it. I was talking to this one lady. She's like, this is the first time I've ever felt sorry for the Dodgers. That's what she said. And wow. You know, because it was objectively hard to watch. I have been on the edge of my seat. I mean, almost literally, like, on the edge of my couch the entire series watching these games. And as soon as I saw Kelly come into the 10th, I physically slumped back in my couch. It was almost like I knew. It was really strange, man.
Had a premonition.
And we were still
right
tied.
Then.
We were still tied. The ball game is tied, and we have a lot of walk-offs at home this year. We had all 3 rookies in the game who each had a walk-off home run back-to-back-to-back, which has never been done this season. You know, I wasn't worried in the 9th. I wasn't. But when I didn't see Kenley, or hell, even May, I mean, Kolarik, somebody. Don't bring
somebody
up Kelly to
Kelly.
Any. I mean,
yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, it was more. It was like a body language thing, man. Like, I felt it. It was really. It was hard. It was not easy. All right, I'm done. Yeah, and this is your show today. All right, what are you doing?
Yeah, I agree. You got me.
It's not a tumor.
No, it's not a tumor. It is a pretty bad loss, but we got we've got.
All right, give me something else. Scherzer in Strasbourg. All right, I'm looking to the future now because I don't even want
to. We gotta look forward to what is in front of us, and that is Cardinals Nationals. Series that
do you think that's going
to
be a series?
Be pretty good.
Do
I
do think it will be.
No, I do think it's going to be a series.
I don't think it's going to be good. Yeah. I think the Nationals will win at in 5 at most. Really? I don't see the Cardinals winning more than one game. Look at how much momentum the Nationals have. They finally broke the streak. They finally won a postseason series. They've never done that in their franchise history, and they beat the best team in the National League. Now they're thinking, oh, this is ours.
Yeah,
the 2 best pitchers.
They do have
the best hitter.
2 great pitchers. And
the 2 best hitters, really. Yeah. It's theirs to lose. I mean, I don't know. What's your opinion on that?
I think probably the Nationals will end up. I do think that it's going to be a series, however. I think that the Cardinals have been playing really loose, really good baseball, and they've got a lot of experience on their team. And I think they're going to be tough. There's going to be a tough test. It's going to be a series. I think the Nationals will probably win out. But they do got these 2 aces, Strasburg and
Well, apparently they have
and
3.
Scherzer. Well, apparently they have 3 after last night. Annabelle
Sanchez
hitting
7 2/3 no-hit innings. Yeah.
And that was quite a performance.
That's what I mean. You know, after getting, I think they only got 5 hits in the first inning when they got 10 runs. But even still, after getting 10 runs in the first inning, don't you think that might mess with their psyche? Thinking, oh, yeah, we can't lose, right?
Well,
I don't know. And then the Nationals had to fight tooth and nail for their win.
For that game, also, the listening to that game, listening to the, I guess I was listening to the Atlanta broadcast for that game, And they were talking about the Cardinals thinking that maybe for the first time they may get home field advantage for the thing if the Nationals won, and they ended up doing so. So I mean, it might, that abrupt sort of mindset may change something, but I don't think so. I think they just ran into a really good pitcher, just thrown out of his mind.
What are you talking about? For the game last night,
the Cardinals getting a nearly no hit.
Right, and if you're going to get nearly no hit by a guy that throws 71 miles an hour, just wait until Scherzer and Strasburg get in there.
Right.
I mean, now Strasburg's arm, who knows? I mean, you know, the guy's never pitched this long in his career, you know, especially these high-pressure innings. Maybe he doesn't even make it out of the NLCS. Who knows? You know, maybe the Nationals still win, but he doesn't pitch in the World Series. It's possible. I would love to see Strasburg, Scherzer, Verlander. That would be amazing.
That would be quite the pitching matchup for sure. But is Strasburg isn't on any sort of like inning watch now, is he?
Well, I mean, I think he will be his entire career. At this point, they can't. It's not like they can, you know, put him on a diet now. This is do or die time. But what I'm saying is, you know, historically speaking, given his ailments in his arm, does he have, you know, four more games in him? Three more games? I don't know.
So probably two. But I was looking at...
Well, at least two. Yeah, but...
I was looking at the careers between these two pitchers. Found some...
What two pitchers?
Strasburg and Scherzer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They are almost the same pitcher in a lot of ways.
When did Strasburg come up? 2010?
Yeah, Strasburg been in the league 10 years, so yeah. 2009?
Was his
rookie year. And Scherzer been in 2 years longer. Been in the league 12 years.
Right.
They share an ERA, career, 3.19.
Really?
And not only that, they also have identical hits, walks, and strikeouts per nine innings. At
really?
7.4 hits per nine inning, 2.4 walks per nine innings, and 10.6 strikeout per nine innings. Both of these guys.
Really? The exact same.
The only difference comes with their whip.
I'm going to say Strasburg has a lower whip.
Yes, but not by much. We're talking about 1.89 versus 1.092.
1.89. Okay. Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, obviously, Scherzer's been around a little longer, and he pitched a lot of his career in the American League, so that doesn't help those numbers, I'm sure. But, wow, I didn't realize how close they were. That's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. And then they're quite the tandem now for this postseason. They've come in the same game now twice. And just dominated.
Yeah, they're if they don't win the pennant, I'm gonna be upset. You know, it's kind of like I was rooting for the Rays, you know, after they beat the A's, and I was really hoping that they could upset Houston. That would have been really
cool. They did a great job of making it a series and getting it to the fifth game.
Every home team won. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was really as best as you could hope for. I mean, Minute Maid Park is such a huge advantage in terms of home field, especially when you mix in the fact that, you know, when you're Verlander or Cole, you know Nolan Ryan personally, you know him really well. But if you're the opposite pitcher coming in and you have to stare at Nolan Ryan because he's always right behind home plate, you know, you have to look at that guy every time you're on the mound. That's got to be
stank eye.
Jesus,
sure,
Christ, that's got to be awful. Now, speaking of, I mean, did you watch that game, the Rays-Houston game, and watch...
I was not able to watch that game, no.
Oh, man. But you saw all the tipping of the pitches, right?
I heard about that. I did not see that.
Really?
Really.
It was pretty insane. It was pretty obvious. Who was it? Tyler Glasnow, right? Is up there. Right. I mean, it was just, it was crazy. And you could see the Astros, like they knew, you know, when he was holding the ball, his starting position, right? The ball below the letters, you knew a curveball was coming. And then he would hold it right above the letters, and you know a fastball was coming. I mean, it was 100%. And so they weren't even offering at curveballs, even curveballs in the strike zone, because they know that they're coming. They're like, no, I'll just wait. There's an at-bat with Altuve where he's just sitting there. Doesn't even flinch, just waits for that high fastball, and then it comes, and he hits it right up the middle. I mean, they were just on him. And, you know, Glasnow's throwing 98, 99, and he's throwing a tight curveball, and you can kind of see it in his face. I think he's thinking, like, what the hell is going on here? You know, these guys are just reading every single pitch. And then you could, there's a point where you could literally read Bregman's mouth saying, high is fastball, low is curveball. He's like talking to Brantley or somebody. It was just, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, the Astros now have a history of finding tip pitches, or being tipped now. A couple of now postseasons, the whole bit with Yu Darvish tipping his pitches there, the Astros picked up on that to great effect.
Yu Darvish's was a little bit more subtle, but that's also because they knew him just from his Texas Rangers days. But this Glasnow one was just crazy, man. I mean, he even admitted after that he knew he was doing and that he has a history of doing that. But that was pretty hard to watch.
And no one in the Rays dugout picked up on that to come out and say, hey, man, watch your hands.
That's the thing I was trying to think of the most. Like, I didn't really understand what was going on there. Like, maybe when you're the pitching coach, at least, right? Maybe your team isn't looking at the pitcher. Maybe the other team's looking at the pitcher, obviously, because they have to go up against him. But maybe if he's your guy, you're not paying that close attention to him. But again, isn't that literally the job of the pitching coach? I mean, it seems very strange that he got through that many innings without anybody telling him, when the entire Astros dugout is chirping.
Yeah, it's no secret at all. It also seemed like the catcher knows what's coming. If he doesn't pick up on any patterns, he's looking that direction too.
Yeah. No, 100%. Last time we were talking about Verlander a lot and in his 3,000K season. But really, I mean, Gerrit Cole has just made a huge name for himself. At first, especially after that Verlander no-hitter earlier in the season, it seemed like Verlander would get the Cy Young. They were both 1-2, but oh my! I mean, Gerrit Cole is 18-0 in the last 5 months. The Astros haven't lost a game with Cole on the mound since July 12th. Wow. They haven't lost at home with Cole pitching since May 22nd. 18-0 in those 5 months. I mean, that's just insane. The last pitcher to win that many games in a row within a single season, you have to go back 107 years.
107 years.
1912, when Rube Marquard. I know Rube Waddell, but no, Rube Marquard fired off 19 wins in a row for the New York Giants.
Wow,
pretty insane stuff.
Yeah,
that game five, eight innings, 2 hits, 10 Ks, 19 swings and misses, and that was kind of low on the K count for him. I mean, only 10 strikeouts. Jesus. He broke the consecutive 10 strikeout record. I think he shattered it. It's just insane. It's crazy. To put it, you know, his numbers in perspective, in 2 games plus 4 outs following the moment Cole left the mound in the 8th inning of game 2, the Rays went out and hit .351 against pitchers not named Gerrit Cole with 6 home runs and 15 runs scored. So he's just a lights out machine. And I mean, that's Nolan Ryan territory. Yeah, Cole extended the streak with double digit strikeouts to 11 games in a row. No pitcher has ever done that. Nolan Ryan territory, especially when he's staring right back at you. It seemed like, to me, I'm always watching that, and it seems like I'd be very intimidated. But I guess, you know, I think they like it. They like seeing the greatest strikeout pitcher of all time sitting right there behind
him. Well, they also know that he's rooting for them too, so.
Right, that helps. Yeah, again, I mean, you know, but it must be brutal to be Glasnow. You know, throwing great stuff. He had so much great movement on that, on all of his pitches that game, but to no avail. Cole has now struck out 351 hitters this year in 228 innings between the regular and postseason. That's the most strikeouts in 1 year, counting both regular and postseason. Obviously, the postseason not even halfway done, by a right-handed pitcher in 45 years since who? Nolan Ryan struck out 367 in 1974. Cole has now punched out 25 hitters in two postseason starts, the most of any two-start span of any pitcher who ever took the mound in October, with the exception of the 1968 World Series. You know, that guy named Bob Gibson.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Got 27.
I heard he was pretty good.
Got
yeah.
27 within a two-game stretch. How insane is that? That's just crazy. Anyway. That's all I got now. I mean, now I got to, like, focus on just hoping that there's going to be good baseball.
Well, I mean, in theory, I know it's not the team that you were hoping for, but in theory, at this point, you got, you know, the four best teams, and
are they the four best teams?
Well, they are in the American League. I think we got the two best teams going at each other, but in the National League, I think you got the two hottest teams.
Ooh,
going into the playoffs, these are the teams that just played the best, had the most complete games, in terms of, you know, well played, well defended, not getting too tight when the mistakes were made, and not giving up and getting the late and timely hitting.
Yeah, maybe the Braves are a little too young, but I mean, I don't know, man. I think the Braves would have put up a much better fight against the Nationals than the Cardinals. I mean, I don't know if they had better pitching, or at least not. I mean, they didn't during Game 5, but I mean, Foltynewicz not even getting out of the first inning is very rare, and that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You know, St. Louis, I know Wainwright has been great, and he shows up in the postseason, but I mean, think about this, right? Like, Washington wins today in St. Louis. I mean, there's no way that they lose at home, right? It might even be a sweep. I don't know. I can't see it going more than five, but who knows? What the hell do I know? My bracket is completely screwed up this season. I don't know anything.
I think everyone's is.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And I mean, I just know that I mean, who I picked to ultimately win is still, well, it's possible for them to win still.
Houston, I'm
Yankees.
No, Yankees.
I told you right here, right around the All-Star break, when you're making the bold predictions.
Yankees?
I picked the Yankees over the Dodgers in
seven. Oh, my God.
Hey, that really sucked.
Oh, my. In seven.
In seven.
In Houston. You mean they're going to win game seven in Houston? Wow.
Well, no, I thought they were going to win against the Dodgers in seven.
I award you no points.
I do think that the Yankees are going to win. I think they're going to be able to get to someone like Greinke in Houston, win one game, one of the first two games in Houston, and then I don't think that the Astros can win on the road in the postseason.
With Garrett Cole game three, you don't think they win game three? Really? All right.
I mean, we'll see. They have not shown that they can win on the road in the postseason.
Well, that is interesting. You know, the Yankees' chances went up extremely higher. Or much to that. That was horrible grammar. Sorry. Went up a lot higher, I guess, after that last Greinke start. I'm sure they were all watching that like, oh, thank God. Now we don't have to face Cole game one. Now Cole has to pitch game five. You know, had Greinke not shit the bed, had they finished up the Rays a little earlier, like they probably should have. Although, you know, I don't want to discredit the Rays. The Rays showed up. But you know what I mean. Like, had Greinke done his job, they get Cole game one. You might even have to see Cole three times if it goes seven, you know? And then there's no way they have the advantage. But you're right. Now Cole going maybe twice. I mean, definitely once, but maybe not even twice in the championship series. That's a huge advantage. And he has to pitch in New York.
In Yankee Stadium, yeah.
No, that's true. Their chances look a little bit better. But I can't see them getting past. I mean, if Correa's healthy.
The way that they just dominated the Twins, you know,
the Twinkies
yes, I think unless this long wait has made their bats go cold, I I still see the Yankees.
Oh, but that was, you just ruined the,
well, no, I didn't.
You didn't?
No. I didn't.
You sure about that?
Pretty sure. I just said that it dominated. I didn't mention how badly.
That brings us to this week's.
We got to do it right now. I'm an early yes. This is definitely getting going to the Minnesota Twins as
ouch.
As a thing. They since, so this is what I found in since 2002. Overall, the Yankees are 101-37 against what? The Twins.
Oh.
Twins have only
they played that much
37 games, and this includes the postseason. Which is now following the series 18-2 in favor of the Yankees, including the last 16 in a row. The Twins have not beaten the Yankees in the postseason since October 5th, 2004.
Really? That's pretty bad.
Yeah. Joe Nathan got the save on that one.
Wow. That's and a turn back time right there.
It really is. So it's been a while for the four. Poor Twins.
That's
cannot beat the Yankees.
You know, I thought, you know, they were just gonna their way to a couple victories.
You think that you know, a team that hits 311 home runs
broke
in
the
regular
record.
Season.
307, wasn't it?
It was a lot.
Whatever it is.
They have
the record.
You think they would hit more than two in three games in the postseason.
Well, Nelson Cruz, they only hit two?
They didn't hit all.
I called Nelson. No, yeah, because Nelson Cruz and Sano both hit one in game one. And I remember saying that, and then they did it. I was like, all right, cool, here we go. And then the lead just got taken away. They didn't. You're telling me they didn't hit any more?
I think they might have hit one in the last game. They did not hit home runs the way that they had been hitting home runs in the rest of the year.
Postseason. I mean, you know all this very well as a Giants fan. All you got to do is eke your way in. You don't have to be the best team. In fact, you could be the worst team, but it all starts over postseason.
It really does. It totally resets. The games are more meaningful. There's less of them. Once you get in, all you got to do is win 11.
So does that mean that the curse of Bryce Harper is real?
That's a clown question, bro.
Oh, what? you know, Bryce who? That's what they're saying. That's what they're going to say in Washington.
Wow.
If they make it to the World Series, is Bryce who?
They've already got the monkey off their back, proverbially speaking, after winning a series.
They dropped that dead weight, and here they are in the NLCS.
Let's be honest. Beating the Dodgers is like winning the World Series. I mean, that's the two are one and the same. Let's switch gears.
It has been the last few years, yes.
We're going to switch gears a little bit to Angels pitchers.
Angels pitchers.
Now, this could have been an ignoble award, except for that one of them died sort of tragically. Oh. And so, you know, we're not gonna do that. But the Angels pitchers, you were telling me, did something that has never been done in the live ball era. Is this correct?
In the live ball era, it hasn't been done in 100 years.
What?
What
happened? I don't know. You're leaving me in suspense here. They have a Japanese guy pitching, but he didn't even pitch this year.
Well, no, they don't.
What did they do or not do?
They had no starters start more than 20 games.
Really?
At least 20 games. No starter.
None?
No pitcher for the Angels this year had at least 20 starts. None of them had at least 20 starts.
And that has happened before?
It happened before, but
like
it hasn't.
A strike year, maybe?
It hasn't happened for a century. Literally 100 years.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, I can go on, but I think we ought to leave that for our trivia question.
Oh, gotcha. Now, are we going to see Joe Maddon wearing red?
Well, you know, it's certainly possible.
for like a few minutes there, I was thinking, oh, maybe he'll be back in blue in L.A. But no, no, that's not going to happen. We don't need it. We don't need the guy. The Angels could use him, though. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's past his prime, but he did get the monkey off the Cubs back.
Yeah.
And he'll always have free beer for life in Chicago. But, yeah, I mean, I think he wants to go to the Angels, right? He spent a lot of time with their organization. Of course, we're talking about Joe Maddon being hired by the Angels as their new manager, seeing as Ausmus is relieved.
I think is not out of the realm of possibility.
Would you like to see him in San Francisco? Or would you like Dusty back?
No, I don't need Dusty back. Don't need Joe Maddon. I think I don't know who they're gonna go for. I think I'd like to see someone
Barry Bonds.
A little bit younger.
Barry.
No, Barry wouldn't make a good manager.
You're like, yeah, just, when the ball comes, hit it over the fence.
Right, yes. Hit them where they aren't. They aren't over the fence. Yeah.
Well, we'll have plenty of hot stove rumors later on to talk about that. Now, since this decade is wrapping up, we like to look back in the last 9 or so, 10 years, I guess. I mean, obviously, the big one would be the Yankees haven't won a World Series this decade, and they have in every decade before.
Since the 20s, yeah.
Right. Oh, since the 20s, okay. So what other nifty tidbits did you pull out of the annals of the last 10 years baseball here?
You know, I've found a lot of lists of from the last 10 years champions of particular categories, like the home run champions of the last 10 years, American and National League.
What are you talking about? I don't know. I'm very confused here.
Well,
if you talk into the microphone, though. You got it. What are you talking about? Albert Pujols, I'm assuming, is leading all these categories?
Albert Pujols in 2010 won the home run crown, but there was a different winner of the home run in the National League every year in the 2010s.
Really? That's pretty cool.
Every
year is a different guy?
Every year. 2010, wow. Starting in 2010, had Albert Pujols, then Matt Kemp.
Yeah, baby.
Ryan Braun.
Should have won the MVP that year, by the way. I was still going to... Ryan Braun. Get the
then Alvarez and Goldschmidt tied for the league in 2013.
Alvarez?
Yeah, with Pittsburgh. All right, so you didn't even remember that.
What Alvarez? Pedro Alvarez?
Yeah.
What? It looks like... Really?
Yeah, 36 home runs. I didn't even remember. Then... Giancarlo, Mike Stanton.
Got it.
Nolan Nolan Arenado and Bryce Harper.
With Nolan both Arenado. 42. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Excuse me while I trip over my tongue. And then Nolan Arenado split again with Carter on Milwaukee. And
Joe Carter of the... of the Toronto Blue Jays?
No, not Joe Carter. It's not giving me...
Carter? What are you talking about? Who the hell... Who are these people, bro? Are you looking at a trusty source here?
I am. And then Mike Stanton again. He was the only repeat. And...
Well, I thought you said Arenado just did it twice. What are you talking about?
Aaron, but he split. He didn't... he didn't win it outright.
Wait, so Giancarlo Stanton win it outright split also? You just lied to me. You just told me it was a different guy every year. I'm very confused now. And who's Carter? Nick Carter of the Backstreet Boys? Joe Carter?
Well, he's not giving me the first names on this list.
Thanks for doing your homework. Appreciate that. All right. The American League, I'm sure there's a lot of repeats.
Yes.
Chris Davis with a K, possibly. Chris Davis with a C, maybe.
Chris Davis with a C did it twice.
Oh, he did do it twice. Was that 14, 15?
It was in 13 and 15.
13 and 15. Got it.
Jose Bautista did it twice.
Joey Bats.
And Chris Davis with a K did it just once.
Oh, interesting.
But we had a run 4 years that Baltimore Oriole won the home run title. Chris Davis, Nelson Cruz, Chris Davis again, and Mark Trumbo.
Nelson Cruz.
Nelson Cruz with 40 home runs.
As an Oriole.
Yeah.
Wow.
In 2014.
What a long decade it's been. Wow. I completely forgot. I remember Trumbo. I had him on my fantasy team. But, wow. Nelson Cruz. I can't even remember him as an Oriole. He's tripping me out.
Liquor in the front, poker in the rear. Something like that.
All right. We're switching gears. Unless you got something else. Here we go. This is your show this week. All right. I'm a shell of a man. This is not where I should be. This is not where I want to be. But alas, a few days have been a bit of a remedy. I don't know, man.
Time heals all wounds.
Not for
you.
Clay
will
Kershaw.
Get over it. Well,
no, dude, there's no way.
Is he come back next year? Is he a dominant pitcher next year?
Of course. I mean, he's dominant every year, man. But it's just, this Giants fan lady that I was talking to the other night, and she was saying, she was just like, I feel so bad for Kershaw. She's like, because I hate him during the season, but, you know, after the season ends, he's like one of the best guys in baseball. I mean, the guy's won the Clemente Award.
Yeah. And then in the postseason, he's just a guy.
Just a guy, right. Not tragically bad, but tragically human, I would say. And then I was sort of bringing it up because we were obviously the Bumgarner comparison gets brought up a lot because he's arguably the best postseason pitcher of our generation. But in the regular season, you know, the lady stopped me. She's like, oh, yeah, no, he's not a Hall of Famer. But Kershaw's definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer, easy. Bumgarner, no. And she's like, yeah, that's fine because it doesn't matter because what he does during the regular season, because in the postseason, if they give him a chance, he really turns up. And so you don't really need to be in the Hall of Fame if you have 3 rings kind of thing. That's the argument she was making. And it's true. I mean, you know, the numbers aren't even comparable. You know, Kershaw is the best pitcher of this generation. Numbers show he's the only pitcher to ever win the ERA title 3 years in a row. No pitcher in the history of the game has ever done that. MVP, multiple Cy Youngs. I mean, yeah, we don't have to get into it, but it's just watching him then, I felt more bad for him than I did for myself, which is very rare because I'm very self-centered and solipsistic, especially after the Dodgers lose. But watching him, I mean, you could see it, man. He'll never get over it, even if the Dodgers win 3 World Series the next 3 years straight. I mean, well, actually, maybe that would help, but
probably would.
I mean, it's just brutal, man. It's just, and again, this is why I can't blame him. It wasn't his fault. He shouldn't have been out there. You know, he can't manage himself. Ugh. Anyway, all right. The Blue Angels are about to start getting on, so we're gonna have to start getting on too here. And plus the game's on, and we should probably be watching this. So there is one quick thing though during that NLDS. Does the name Ryan Helsley mean anything to you?
No.
Cardinals pitcher, who we'll probably see, but he won't have to worry about the tomahawk chop. You didn't see this?
No, I did not see this.
Before Game 5 of the series at SunTrust Park, which the Cardinals went on, of course, to win in a horrible Halloween slaughter edition fashion, the Braves did not distribute the foam tomahawks to their fans to engage in the popular tomahawk chop gesture that has been part of their, I'm going to put air quotes, culture for the last 30 years.
Yeah, the most annoying chant ever.
Because earlier in that series, yeah, and extremely, just really bad. I'm not for PC, but that's just terrible. Earlier in the series, Helsley's, whose mother is Cherokee and whose father is a quartered Cherokee, told The Athletic that they found the use of such imagery disappointing. So out of respect, you know, they actually didn't. Now, of course, all you got to do is just use your hand to do it like they used to do, right?
It still did it. You still heard the chant.
Yeah,
so.
I know. And I thought that was pretty nice. I mean, it's a small gesture. And, you know, I'm sure the Braves fans probably think that they got cursed because of that, right? Because they weren't distributed their foam hands. And maybe if I was if I lived in Atlanta, I would
put the foam tomahawks.
Put my, equal rights aside for the game, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, it's the kind of thing that usually I get upset about, like, oh, how stupid. But in this case, yeah, man, like, it's pretty bad that they have that. Plus, the, I mean, the Indians, we talked about before, they're getting rid of their logo, right? Chief
Wahoo.
Wahoo, right. And good. Yes, you don't need them. You don't need a caricature cartoon picture of the most oppressed people on this land. I mean, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. And again, if you read the comments on any of the articles that talk about it, it's just all racist ass Braves fans saying, "You cursed us. They cursed. He cursed." You know, I mean, he's going to get all kinds of hate mail, I'm sure now. But whatever, you know. Apparently, the tomahawk chop goes back to the Florida State University football games and came to the Braves.
Seminole. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, do you know how and why it came to the Braves?
I don't know the story.
I did a little digging for you.
All right.
Deion Sanders, the cross-platform superstar, a former Seminole player, say that five times fast, joined the Braves in 1992. And so it's been going on ever since.
Ah.
Because of Deion.
So I have Neon Deion to blame. Okay. It's good to know.
Yeah, you have Deion to blame. I'm surprised nobody's brought that up to him because I see him every once in a while on doing analysis and everything. That's. But yeah.
Well, maybe now that this podcast is out there and it's out there and it's known by a much wider audience.
That is true.
And maybe we'll start to hear.
I'm going to put him on the map. Yeah. Definitely.
Fancy. How fancy.
All right, that's it. I want to wrap this up because I want to watch this baseball game. But is there anything else that I'm missing?
Oh, we just got the ask and answer our trivia questions.
Well, I mean, besides the trivia, obviously.
No, I don't have anything else. I got, you know, I'm just excited for this postseason. Been enjoying all of the baseball games that I've been able to watch, been able to listen to mostly.
Why are you listening? Because you are nostalgic for an old-timey experience?
I'm at work and don't have access to a TV while the majority of the games are going on.
Got it. That brings us to last week's trivia question. Justin Verlander did accomplish his first 300 strikeout season. You know, back when we asked this, he was, I don't know, like 11 away or something, so we weren't sure if he's going to do it, but he did. Justin Verlander finished off his first 300 strikeout season in the year he reached 3,000 for his career. Now, many pitchers, actually I think only 11 pitchers, but still, let's say many pitchers have 3,000 or more strikeouts in their career, but only one in history ever recorded his 3,000th strikeout in the midst of a 300 strikeout season. Now, who was that pitcher? We got Marvin C. in Cupertino.
Marvin.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Marvin C. says, "It's got to be Nolan Ryan." Well, that's generally speaking, yeah, that's usually a good guess. And usually, if you're talking about a pitching record that has to do with strikeouts, that's a safe guess. That's like putting C on a Scantron sheet. You're probably going to get it right. No, in fact, Nolan Ryan obviously had a long career of strikeouts, and he did have a 300 strikeout season in 1989, which is insanely hard to believe. But you know, by then he had already blown past 3,000.
Right.
Way gone. So no, not Nolan Ryan. We got David Anderson in Long Beach. It says Curt Schilling. Ooh, now that's a good guess. Curt Schilling did have two 300 strikeout seasons, and he did finish with more than 3,000. But not the same year.
No,
at all. Tanya W. in Santa Maria. You know, we've been gone for a couple weeks.
Yeah, we got a lot of emails for this, a lot of guesses.
I should say I had horrible mouth surgery 2 weeks ago, so I literally haven't been able to talk for a while. I'm still getting over it. 4 gaping holes in my head, not fun. So we do apologize. I probably should have said that before. Last time. Anyway, all right, just a quick update on my ailing health, and my mental health is out. That's just gone. That's been gone.
That'll return.
Since Wednesday. Will it?
Yeah.
I hope so. David Anderson. Oh,
just
no,
got to remember Tanya. Jimmy Dugan's number
there
one
is crying.
Rule.
There is crying.
There's
sometimes.
No crying. No.
Well.
No crying in baseball. Sorry. All right.
Well, I also didn't have beer for like a week. So
well,
that
that's
was,
something
that,
to cry
see,
about.
Exactly. That was pretty. It was a trying week. Tanya W. in Santa Maria says, Steve Carlton. Ooh. Steve Carlton. You know he had more than 4,000 strikeouts in his career? But he only had one 300 strikeout season, and that was in 1972, so quite early in his career.
Man.
So that wasn't the 3,000. Never, only had one in his career and had finished with 4,000?
He pitched for a long time.
He pitched for a long time. That's pretty remarkable. No, it is not. Wow, it's not Steve Carlton. All right, well, that's we got Frank Cerrone in DTLA, downtown Los Angeles. All right, Frank. I Dodgers need a win here. All right, what do you got? Frank says Randy Johnson.
Ah,
ding,
yeah.
Ding, ding.
A teammate of one of our previous guests.
Randy Johnson, that is correct. And that same year, 2000.
Right.
Well, actually, 2001 is the year that they won it. But yeah, 2000 was his perfect game year, I believe. Maybe that was 2001 also. 2001, of course, they won the World Series in New York, like days after 9/11, which was pretty brutal. Actually, was it in New York?
No, they
no, yeah, it was in Arizona.
They won in Arizona.
Right.
Yeah, but it was against New York.
That's right. 2000, Randy Johnson. He did it. The only other person to do that. So that is pretty elite air.
Yeah,
to say the
indeed.
Least.
Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah. Verlander, easy Hall of Famer. You know, Cole still remains to be seen. I'm sure he'll be okay. I'm sure he'll be pretty damn good.
Things keep going the way they are going for Cole. He will be.
Alrighty. So, Frank Cerrone, I've already emailed you. You know the drill. You know you've been the winner for days now. I should have maybe spoiled it a little bit, but I felt so bad because the guy got the right answer, and it's been weeks since we've done a show. So, rats off to you, Frank. There you go. T-shirts in the mail. Now, what do you have for me this week?
Well, we alluded to it earlier about the Angels not having a single pitcher to start
20 games. Right.
In a season happened for a century. So what was the last team to not have 20 starters or 20 game starter?
Wow.
In a season.
I can't believe it's ever happened. That's pretty insane. Yeah. So it has happened.
It has
you
happened.
You gotta turn back the clock. And you gave us a bit of a hint, I guess.
Well, there. Yeah. I mean, if you can count to 100, maybe you know the year.
But you gotta count to 100 backwards. Now that's tough.
Might be.
Alrighty, remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Last team to not have a 20 starter. Starter?
Yeah. 20 game 20 starter.
20 starter. 20 game starter.
Yeah, there you go.
Jesus Christ, it's been a long, tough week.
Yeah.
This better be a good series. And at the same time, as much as I hate the Nationals, I really do like watching Juan Soto. I mean, his approaches to at-bats are
he's
a thing of beauty,
a
considering the guy can't even buy a Bud Light. I mean, the guy can't even legally drink, and he's just, looks like a stick, like a
he
goddamn
will by
pro.
He will, by the time that they win the World Series.
He's scary. Well, they're not going to win the World Series, but at least they'll win the pennant, and if they're going to be the Dodgers, they better. On that note, from San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
I'm Samuel Paul.
Remember, baseball is life. The rest is just details.
The rest is just details. Go watch some baseball.
There you go.
Some playoff baseball.